Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices to power. I do not own the rights to this music. Bringing voices to power network.
There's a big delay. Can you turn it down a little? Hey, Roger. Turn it down. There's a big delay. Because I hear him say it and then later.
www.thechildsupporthustle.com. Catch the Child Support Hustle Show Saturdays on the Bringing the Voices to Power Network. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. EmpoweringStrategies.net. Bringing voices to power. Child Support Hustle Show with Kenya Rockman. We're bringing voices to power. With many other activists like Brenda Hampton in Corlin, Alabama, we're bringing awareness to the people.
All right, in this episode of the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, I will have Senate to candidate Mike Smith. Mike Smith grew up in Decatur and graduated from Decatur's Austin High School in 1984. He has lived in Senate District 2 since 1988. He spent his career working as a firefighter until he retired in 2009. He sees the American dream becoming harder and harder to achieve every day. Mike Smith is asking that the voters send him to the Alabama Senate so that he can work to fix our economy and give all Alabama workers the opportunity to succeed. Good morning, Mr. Smith. How's it going?
Good morning. It's going very well. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. I can't complain, and thanks for asking. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, like you said, my name is Mike Smith, and I'm running for Senate District 2. Senate District 2 covers all of Madison City, West Huntsville, all of the Arsenal, covers Harvest and Tony area, covers East Limestone over in Limestone County and goes all the way over to in Limestone County. So it's a big district.
Yeah, I want to ask you, what are some of your ideas on how Alabama we can fix our economy?
Well, I'm glad you asked. That's one of the things on my literature is it's all about the economy. And that's a fact. Everything, mental health care, health care, all these things are related to the economy. I start on my platform, my basic platform. I start with a livable wage. You know, people have to have hope. They have to be able to make ends meet. And we have to provide stability for Alabama families so we can have our security for Alabama families so that we can have stability in Alabama's economy. We have to raise that minimum wage high enough above poverty so that people are not into danger of falling back. And the reason, and that would be $15 an hour, and I talk about it everywhere I go, is something we can do. When we look at it, it actually will benefit small businesses as much as it will benefit workers in North Alabama or within all of Alabama. And we do need to do it statewide.
Yeah, we need to do it statewide. That's what I can't understand is what's wrong with the people down there in Montgomery that they don't realize that the more money people have, the more money they're going to spend. The reason why people are not spending money and businesses are not thriving is because people can't afford it. If they could afford to shop at a lot of these places, even the mom and pop places, they would do it if they could.
You are exactly right. You know, we tried to raise minimum wage in Birmingham, and I think 3 days later our state legislature stopped that. We have a wrong-minded approach to labor in Alabama. Alabama is populated by the working poor, and we need to change that. We build an economy strong by putting money in at the lowest level, okay? And when I talk to different groups, I tell them a small business doesn't need a tax cut. A small business needs a customer. And just exactly what you're talking about, we have to have people to buy our goods. And when we do that, we'll have a strong economy. Now, let's talk about assistance programs. In Alabama, we spend about $260 million a year on assistance. If we would just provide a livable wage statewide, then we can reduce the spending that we spend now on assistance by about $200 million. And we can take that $200 million and we can expand Medicaid. We should have expanded Medicaid in the beginning. Alabama is one of the 19 states that hasn't expanded Medicaid.
Okay, let me jump in right here. Let me jump in and ask you something right here, because I represent the grassroots and assistance. You know, especially something like Social Security assistance that people have earned and paid into. If you want to lower, you're talking about lowering the assistance by $200 million. Okay, would there be anything in place where their assistance isn't lowered until a minimum wage bill or something like that goes through? Because a lot of times people they'll jump to the extreme first.
You're exactly right. I use the word assistance because I don't like to use the word food stamps and terms like that.
There's a lot of different types of assistance other than food stamps.
We're talking about $260 million that we spend in Alabama through our state budget that go to people who need EBT cards, assistance because they don't have enough to live. We're not talking about Social Security or any of that. Now, if we were to raise to a livable wage statewide, then we wouldn't have to provide assistance and we would reduce our spending. Now, I tell people all the time.
We definitely would reduce the spending, but I don't think that, you know, which is a good idea because what you're saying, that would help people like at Walmart. A lot of people at Walmart have to use food stamps. A lot of wives of soldiers, military families have to use food stamps. They would be the ones who would probably be in a better position. I'm talking about the least of these, the ones who are not in the military, the ones who are just poor.
We're talking about the same thing.
That sounds like that bill and that idea would not address those, but it would be good if people working at Walmart didn't have to use food stamps. That'd be very good, because if they're working at Walmart and they're having to use food stamps, then they're part of the working poor, which you sounds like would be very well for the working poor. But
it would do well for every worker in Alabama. by raising it to a livable wage. And when I say we're going to reduce assistance, if we're going to make change in Alabama, we can't go out and say we're going to raise tax and that kind of stuff. People are not going to go along with it. What we have in Alabama, they say we have a budget crisis. We do not have a budget crisis. We have a revenue crisis. It's about how we spend our money. And that's what I'm talking about here. And the first thing that we would have to do to really turn this around is a livable wage. Once we get people on a livable wage and they're not needing assistance, and you understand poor folks don't want a handout. They want dignity. They want to be able to work 40 hours and be able to make ends meet.
And yeah, it sounds more to me like what's neat. And what you're saying, I'm not knocking what you're saying. I think it is a great idea. Like you said, the working poor should not have to use food stamps. But what about
– Yeah, because right now
it seems like we need something here in Alabama, and we got a people that all these jobs with a lack of people being able to do the jobs. When is somebody, some elected official, going to have some program that target everybody that's on assistance – to try to get them certified in something? I was just reading that there's a shortage, especially here in Alabama, nurses and CNAs. I mean, these programs are not loan programs. Somebody should be out there with some type of bill. Target, if you want these folks off of assistance, help them out of it. You know, if you want to help somebody pull their bootstraps up, they got boots on, but they don't have no straps. Give them the strap, and the strap would be the training. The strap would be the training to get them certified to fill some of these jobs we have a shortage in and to get them off of assistance. It would serve a dual purpose if something was targeted toward our most needy, the least of these. But I agree with you wholeheartedly that the working poor should not have to use food stamps. I mean, what are you working for?
How can you set a minimum wage below the established poverty line? That makes no sense. If we're going to have a minimum wage, it has to be above a poverty line. In Alabama, a family of four with one job making $11.80 an hour is statistically in poverty, and they qualify for assistance. I don't want to take assistance away from anybody, but what we have to be smart about is how we do our money. So, and I'm going to get to the education part that you're talking about, but I got a three-step plan, and it's very important that one pays for the other. So if we raise that minimum wage, okay, and we are able to make a reduction in our spending because now people have money and they're able to make ends meet, we take that money. And it should be about $200 million. The estimated cost is about $130 million to expand Medicaid. We should have expanded Medicaid 5 or 6 years ago, but we didn't. Right now in Alabama, we pay, you and I, taxpayers, 100% of the cost of Medicaid. If we had expanded Medicaid, and we still can, if we expand Medicaid, the federal government picks up 90% of that cost, okay? Now then, that creates 15,000 jobs we need.
It also
takes 300,000 Alabamians that are working a job and sometimes two jobs and can't afford health care. By expanding Medicaid, those 300,000 families would have access to health care. But now here's the other important part. It will increase our tax base through sales tax because, like you said, people have money in their pocket now to spend. Okay, they're estimating $240 million. Increase in sales tax, and all these people that no longer need assistance and are actually making ends meet, they become taxpayers. So this funds our budget, and that's why I say they're cutting services constantly because they say we don't have the funding. It's because of how you use the money. When we do that, we got to step into the third part of my plan, and that is mental health care reform. We have to have a statewide mental health care system that is functioning. When we do that, we can reduce the population in our jails by as much as a third. We've got people in jail cells that should be in hospital beds. And we can't go to Montgomery tomorrow and say, let's build this huge health care or mental health care system, and we don't have a way to pay for it. But what I'm talking about, if we can raise that minimum wage finance Medicaid expansion, increase our tax base. 51% of our budget comes from tax base. Increase that, then we will have the money then to take care of the mental health care system, which is non-existent in Alabama since they've Governor Bentley's closed most of it. Once we do that, then we can step into education. Okay.
Okay. Let me go back there. We're talking about mental health and Medicaid and how to expand it and how to get it paid for and all that. How do you feel about cannabis and hemp? Recreational marijuana. I think your other primary opponent on here, and she gave her take on it. And anytime I have anybody on this show, I like to get their take on it because there's a wave around the country, and there's a wave in Alabama too. People are tired of people putting in this unfounded remarks about cannabis, and we know for tens of thousands of years, and even in the Bible, cannabis is mentioned. And when you talk about the jails, look at what happens. A person in Alabama get caught up with some marijuana, cannabis in Alabama, they could go to jail. They wouldn't be able to vote. They wouldn't be able to get an apartment, and they wouldn't be able to get a job. That does not make sense. You're not even an American anymore when the government does those two things to you for a plant that has been in use for tens of thousands of years. Even here in the U.S., it used to be sold all over the U.S. The documentation is there. That's why I laughed in Alabama when they said, we got it, let's do more research, let's give, who do they give, Auburn and UAB some funding to do that. That's hogwash and that's garbage. The research has been done. The history is there. And they need to stop trying to feed Alabama's prison industrial complex with low-level drug offenders and get these people, and like you said, training. How does it help the prison system when they cut out all the programs that train these prisoners?
Well, our prison should be a place for rehabilitation, not punishment. The punishment itself is going to prison. You've asked two important questions. One is about cannabis. The other is about justice reform. Our jails are overpopulated for two reasons. One is it's estimated that half the people in our jails, or nearly half the people in our overcrowded jails, at 160%, by the way, are receiving medication for mental illness. Now, to buy medication for somebody who's suffering from mental illness and then put them in a box is foolish. What we have to do is get this mental health care system working so that we can separate out those people that need that help. The second thing is would fall under justice reform. That is that we have in our jails people there for nonviolent crimes. We have people serving 10 years for possession of marijuana. That's ridiculous. Okay. We done this three strikes you're out thing back in the 90s. And
With Bill Clinton.
You're absolutely correct. And that has overloaded our jails. So the justice reform aspect of your question is that we need to stop these mandatory sentences on people who are in jail for nonviolent crimes. And we need to get the people in there on nonviolent crimes. We need to get them out. But before we get them out, or as we get them out, we don't just put them back out on the street with no hope. That's where we need to do the rehabilitation, as you're talking about. We have created a big mess, and it's not going to be over in one day. We're going to have to get this thing worked back into position. Those two alone would eliminate the money, the overspending that we're doing on keeping people in jail instead of getting them jobs. Okay. Now, the third part, I guess, of your question is about marijuana. Now,
you told me
earlier, most of your listeners are older, and I'm older. And coming up my time, I just couldn't justify it. But I'm not going to lie to you. I drank a beer, okay? And I've never actually thought that marijuana was any worse than a beer. It wasn't socially acceptable. And that's the only issue I see with it, is that it's not socially acceptable, so don't do it.
That's where we got to re-educate our people about its medicinal properties.
I agree.
There is a religious property. I think myself, and I went spoken to, for two groups mm-hmm. down at the Alabama State Capitol for the legalization. Mm-hmm. I'm pro-legalization.
Right.
I think
mm-hmm.
we should legalize it. I think we should regulate it. I think we should tax it. And I think it should fund education and social programs that you're talking about right
I,
now.
I agree.
And the thing about the thing about it is there's so much money being made, and Alabama has the type of climate that we could outdo anybody in the country. And this money,
you're
we wouldn't be having
right.
all these fights about Medicare, Medicaid, and look
that's
at some of all the ailments. We wouldn't
it,
have
it,
to
it
worry about
cash
expanding problem. Medicaid so much if we treat a lot of these ailments with cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
And in other states, they are using cannabis to get people off of opioids. It gets people
off
of that. And your body, your human body, if God did not make you, want you to consume cannabis, why in the world did he design you with cannabinoid receptors throughout your entire body? It's ridiculous the game they're running on us about cannabis, and it's time that it's stopped. It's time we legalize it, regulate it, tax it, and use that to fund education and to fund health care. That's just it, in my opinion. We got to have some people with some guts. And the big winners in this is what I'm telling you, I'm telling everybody that's running for office is, the big winners and the big people who really need to stand up on this issue are the landowners and the farmers. Because anywhere you grow good corn, you can grow good cannabis. And the thing about, hemp, you know, and hemp doesn't get you high, but they make all type of products out of it. But hemp doesn't need all the water that they're using on all these corn crops. Hemp doesn't need all these pesticides that they're using on these crops because it naturally chokes out everything. So if you don't have to use pesticides and you don't need that much water, where is the common sense coming from? And anything made with plastic, the plastic like your laptop, your cell phone, anything that's made like that can be made from hemp. And it's biodegradable.
Yes.
There's so many truths to it that we need to stop pussyfooting around and playing around, worried about offending this person, that person, and get down to the real science. We've been down this road before because in 1914, the U.S. agricultural government predicted that within 100 years that all paper made would be made from hemp. You wouldn't even need to cut down trees. It's just ridiculous on what we're doing.
You know, I'm a retired firefighter. Back when I was in fire school years ago, the best rope you could get was hemp. But and by the way, I noticed I'd seen something weird.
Mitch McConnell, you're exactly right about that because hemp is also fire resistant. It's fire resistant.
Let's talk about that marijuana and going back to where I was and like I said some.
I want to get a flat answer from you. Yes or no? Would you support the decriminalization legalization?
You're about to get one. And then let me talk to your older viewers, like we were discussing earlier. I had, you know, I couldn't make myself cross that line. And about a year or two ago, I saw a study where it is an impossibility to overdose on marijuana. Okay.
Correct.
That one fact. And you remember, I told you as a firefighter, I spent years in running ALS services through the fire department. I have seen stuff, substance abuse. I've seen what happens to people. And then when I saw that you can't overdose on it, that changed my mind. Personally, I agree with you 100%. I would like to see it legalized. I think there's one point you did point out that is we should tax it, we should regulate it, and by doing so, that will reduce crime dramatically. Because when we make something taboo and then a crime, when we make it taboo and illegal, then crime grows around it. You see what I'm saying? So I think that by regulating it, taxing it the same way as we do whiskey, beer, or cigarettes, that will do have a two-pronged approach to it. I do think this. I think it should be on a referendum, and I will absolutely vote yes to put it on the ballot for the people of the state to vote on it. Okay, I think that's the way
that's
it should
true.
Go.
I think if you try
to do it any other way, you're gonna run into a lot of problems because you can't argue with it when the people vote for it. And I think if it were on a referendum now, it would get voted in. Let me mention one other thing.
True.
The medical marijuana. Now, I've never been against using the medical marijuana, and you're much more educated on it than I am. I know that aspirin comes from a plant. Okay, and if we can derive a drug or a medication from marijuana that helps people, like all these veterans we have that come back with PTSD, and there's derivatives of the marijuana plant that's in the medications that can help them. Children that are having seizures multiple times a day, there are ingredients in medication made from marijuana that can stop those seizures. We get aspirin from a plant. I fail to see how anybody could justify that if there's medical uses for the marijuana that create medications that help us, that absolutely we should have already been doing that. As far as the legalization, personally, I'm for it, and I think it should be referendum like you said.
I assume you feel the same way also when it comes down to any type of lottery. You should just let the people decide and take the people. I think a lot of people get down there in Montgomery and they get inside their office or get inside those chambers and they just feel like, I mean, they get beside themselves. Like they know what's best for the people. If the people are talking about it and you're seeing it reported in all the news agencies, all the social media, you should put it out there. But we got a lot of politicians down there and feel like they know what's best for everybody. I'm just so sick of that on the Democrat and Republican side.
When it's an issue like the lottery or legalization, those are hot button issues, okay? And if we go down to Montgomery and we pass something that's not popular, we have actually defeated our purpose. It's just going to cause more problem. If you put it on the referendum and the people vote in favor, then shut up. It's over. You know, the people voted in.
Yeah, you're correct.
And we can move on. So when I say referendum, it's not to get away from it. It's to get it done once and for all. Okay?
Yeah.
And on lottery, when I talk about education, I had to stop on that one. There's a thing called Accountability Act. As soon as I get to Montgomery, I'll introduce legislation to repeal the Accountability Act. The Accountability Act is a scholarship program to get kids from failing schools to passing schools. The problem is that less than half of the children that are getting the scholarships are actually in a failing school. I also disagree with labeling public schools as pass or fail. That's inappropriate. But the Accountability Act does that, and it also diverts taxes from the ETF and from the general budget. The issue here is this Accountability Act money goes to private schools in Alabama, okay? And I love the idea that we have private schools. It's a choice. It's a freedom. It's a nation of liberties. But not one dime of public tax money can ever go to fund anything in a private school. What makes America great and the basis for the American dream is that we get a free, quality, equal education for every child. Okay? That's what government does. And so I want to stop the Accountability Act. By doing so, we will increase the funding in the education. Also, they have a thing called the Rolling Reserve, which simply put is where the legislature steals money from ETF to cover their own mistakes. I'd like to stop that from happening. Then education would be funded. Now, we do those two things. Education is funded again, and now we pass an education lottery. And we try to get every child in the state of Alabama 2 years of college free, like they do in Tennessee now. As far as a lottery goes, it's not a moral issue. $200 million leave this state every year. To Georgia, Tennessee, Florida.
If they
want to
talk about a moral issue, I mean, what was it in the Bible? Didn't Noah or Moses or somebody cast lots? Casting lots is dice. But they always did things like that. And some of the first lotteries funded Yale, Harvard. How do you think these universities got started? They got funded through lotteries.
You know, I don't want to offend anybody's church or their faith. And I think that it was ridiculous to ever bring lottery up as a moral issue, but it was. The Democratic Party put in an education lottery, and the Republican Party beat it by saying it was gambling's a sin. But, you know,
I'm a big fan and a diehard supporter for Don Siegelman. I think the whole Democratic Party as a whole, I don't think they sold it good enough. That's the only flaw I think that it ever had, that it wasn't sold.
That's why people
are more in favor of it, because they're hearing more about it. And like you said, what you just said about Tennessee, and everybody's getting that free education. But I thought the lottery that the Republicans are talking about now and have been whispering about is one where a big percentage of the lottery money would go into a general fund budget. No, I would like a lot to be some sort of like Siegelman's, something that's earmarked almost totally for education and healthcare. I would go with that. Split it between healthcare and education, and we'd be just fine here in Alabama.
I agree.
Or job training. Split it three ways. Healthcare, job training, education.
That's kind of, you know, what I was getting to. To start with, by doing the steps that I have in my plan, we can actually get education funding back where it should be. Then we add to that the lottery. We can increase education. If you want to do economic development, if you want plants to come into your state, when you've got education is one of the main issues they look at. And if we get our people in our state, number one, livable wages, making ends meet, a strong economy, people with health care. In Alabama, they're estimated that premiums are 15% higher because we didn't expand Medicaid and we have so many people that don't have insurance. These are all things that would bring people into Alabama. And that's on the lottery. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this is a question that I have to get out there because it's part of what we do here. Well, how do you feel about family court reform? Just like now, there is a cry for a need. We got this equal parenting bill going through the Senate and then falling dead and put on hold in the legislature because 180 something, I think, child psychologists, they just printed something a few months back about the best outcome from a child is to have equal time with both parents. But the family courts don't do that because we know the family courts thrive on division. They make their money by having this family divided and at each other's throat. And also, I want to ask you this question because a lot of people rarely talk about it. Do you know what Title IV defunding is?
Now you have to give me a little more on that. You said,
Title IV defunding, it falls up under the Social Security Act. And to me, in my view, and the people that I work with, that's the Child Support Hustle. You can visit them at www.thechildsupporthustle.com. What we talk about is that's what's breaking Social Security. And what Title IV defunding does is they give matching funds to your local Department of Human Resources for their cases. Say, for instance, a man and a woman, they get a divorce, they go to court, the man has to pay $500 a month in child support. Whether that man pays or not, the federal government is going to give Morgan County DHR $2,500. It's a 5-to-1 deal to manage and service the case. We don't feel that's right because we advocate
$2,500 a month or per case? Is it $2,500 a month or per
case? A month. Because they have set the monthly child support at $500. So the federal government under Title IV defunding Social Security Act will give that local entity 5-to-1, whatever they set in the case. This flies in the face of everything experts have said. Child support need to start at a lower level and gradually go up. But now the way they do it, especially there in Morgan County is one of the most notorious, vicious ones of them all in the state. What they do is And also what they do is get that 5-to-1. So that's putting, why should they get 5-to-1 funding coming out of the Social Security Department to maintain the case? They're getting more than the mother get and the child getting. They're getting 5-to-1. To me, that's government welfare. There's a lot of welfare going on in communities. I admit that. But the government, especially like the one in Morgan County, that's a welfare baby too.
Yeah. I want you to send me something. I'll give you my address when we get through on that 4D funding. I really do want to look into that more.
Yeah, you need to look into that because I tell you another thing, too. They also get extra money for locking people up. You know, debtors' prisons has been outlawed in America for years, but in Morgan County is notorious for locking people up who can't afford their child support, and they're notorious for not letting people prove that they don't have it. They'll just, no matter what the person goes in there and says and can prove, if they feel like you should have it, they will lock you up. And that way, at least they're getting the $200 a day for your stay. And I'm going to tell you how they do it over there in Morgan County. A person gets put in jail for child support, they're going to do about 60 to 90 days in jail. Add that with $200 a day that local jail is going to get from the state for that inmate. Do you really think they're spending $200 a day on inmates? I mean, look at Anna Franklin keeping all that money. That's where some of that money is from. But besides that, this is what they're even locking up people with jobs. And guess what they got to do? For 60 days, they have to work in a work release. They have to turn themselves into the jail, but the child support will take 35% of their weekly check, and the jail will take 28% of their weekly check. And they do that for 60 days. And then they're getting the $200 a day for having an inmate. They're double and triple dealing over there. And I just think that is a shame. That is a shame. We need family court reform to make everything equal in courts. You know, a child deserves to have a mother and a father, they should be treated on the same level. But when you get things like Title IV funding, where people are getting 5-to-1 money on that, that's going to create a hunger and a foaming at the mouth to create more bigger outlandish cases. And the higher they set it, they got 18 years to keep going back fighting to raise it up and up and up and up. Meanwhile, they can just bill the Social Security department for how much ever they got. You know, what child, I know some people with children 6 months old and the father is paying $900 a month. What child is using $900 a month that's 6 months old? This is ridiculous. Okay, before we got about seven or eight more minutes. Before we, I'm going to send you that information too because it's very serious. Yeah. I just did a child support hustle town hall in Huntsville, Alabama, at the Richard Shower Center, and we had activists come from 8 different states came down here, people trying to get this reformed. Okay. But just send me the information, I'll send it to you. But before we get off of here, how can people help your campaign? How can they contact you, follow you, donate, and all the other things? Give us that information.
I will certainly do it. I wish we had more time. We could go further. Justice reform is something we have to do.
Hey, you always welcome to come back on. My show's always open. I think people need to hear from politicians. I'm not.
All right.
Okay. I don't mind people coming up and sharing their views.
Okay. If your listeners would take the time, if you would go to MikeForALSenate.com. Many of the things we talked about and some we didn't get to are explained on my website. That's just MikeForAlSenate, MikeForALSenate.com, and contact me. I would love to answer any questions that you have. You know, I hate to ask for contributions. Because honestly, I want to go to Montgomery to help people, not to ask them for stuff. But we have Act Blue Button on our campaign. We're in the process now of buying advertisement and signs, and I'm sure you understand. I'm sure you've heard many times, you know, how much all this costs. We're running on a shoestring budget, but we have actually we're actually made progress this month. We've got a Facebook Live your people. Listeners may want to look at.
Tell us when this comes. It's already up on your page.
It's every Monday night from 8 to 8:15. And you know, it started at 200 on the first Monday, and by the fourth Monday, we're up over 800. So it's increasing every week. And we, you know, we're in this campaign to win it. And I do need your help. I need to finish this race strong. And listen, I'll fight for you in Montgomery. Some of the things that we talked about, you mentioned the lottery. What you needed was people on the floor in Montgomery that could make the argument for you. I will fight, okay? And I can do it. I can win an argument. I don't go into things lightly. I try to educate myself on the point, so I'm very responsible about that. But all the issues we talked about today, it begins with livable wages. People have to have hope. If we can expand Medicaid, that's a moneymaker for our budget, and then our budget can help us with mental health care, and a lottery can help us with education. So to me, it's clear. We can turn Alabama around and make it a wonderful place to live. We can get rid of this reputation of the working poor and being 48th and 49th and everything. But I need to get to Montgomery to help you, you know. So if you're, again, it's Mike Smith, and it's for State Senate District 2. I am in a primary. I need you to call your friends and get people out on June the 5th to pull a Democratic ticket and vote for Mike Smith for State Senate, and go to Mike for ALSenate.com. And if you can help us, $5, $10, anything will help. We've got about five more weeks to go, so we would much appreciate it. And other than that, do you have another question for me?
No, I think that just about does it. I appreciate you calling in, and
well, I appreciate you having me. I've enjoyed it.
My show's always welcome because if any candidate progress mm-hmm. on any issue, or they want to update people mm-hmm. on the issue, they good to come back on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And talking Senate District 2 candidate Mike Smith. He's asking for your vote, so go to his website and check him out and support him. And I'm going to end the show with mm-hmm. with a few minutes of Carol Rhodes, if you care to listen, Mike. I'm going to mute your mic.
Okay.
So I'm going to mute your mic, but you'll still be able to listen. And she'll be talking about, she's an insider inside of DHR. She left DHR and wrote a book called Friend of the Family, Enemy of the Courts,
okay.
because she did that because she was told the whole time she was there, she's not the friend of the family, she's the friend of the courts. And she blew the whistle on how they were making killing.
You know,
for the children and families. It's a pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce to you Ms. Carol Rhodes.
Thank you. My purpose today is not to dazzle you with my oratorical brilliance and skills. I merely want to say that I came to the 37th Circuit Family Court to make a difference. I was well qualified and hoped to be able to help Michigan families of divorce and separation, but early on I realized that the system was not designed to be child-friendly. No friendship nor honest conciliation were ever allowed in the family justice system between caseworkers and clients. It was all about money. How to get the federal and state tax dollars that were allotted each case for enforcement. In fact, our director would say regularly, we aren't the friend of the family, we're the friend of the court. We stumbled over ourselves trying to get more Title 4D cases on our records and to increase the child support orders because the federal government granted huge allotments for each case we enforced. In the years I worked in the system, I witnessed regular deception to clients that was mandated by office policy. I saw gender bias and discrimination. I saw records destroyed. I saw office policies and rules change from week to week for the profit of the agency. I saw hundreds of pleas for parenting time or enforcement get buried because there is no money in enforcing custody or visitation issues. Increasing the child support money that came into our offices was the goal for each of us. We were rated according to how much money we brought in through asset seizures, income garnishment, court hearings, warrant issue. We wrote the orders and then we enforced them. The judge merely rubber stamped our efforts. My director proudly told me that the Child Support Enforcement Agency was the darling of the circuit court and that we actually made money for the judge and the court. Unlike the sheriff's department and so many other, our county or state was not an exception to the rule. we were one of the most successful counties, and we shared training with other counties and states so they could learn how to maximize their efforts toward increased collection. We were not only told to withhold information, forms, policies, laws, and statutes from our clients with questions, but we were forbidden to help them obtain